What's going on, guys? Welcome back to another episode of the Hamilton Train Podcast. If you are new here, welcome to the show. My name is Jared Hamilton. If you're new around this area, and thank you for being here. I really appreciate it. Now, today's episode, I have a very special guest that I'm interviewing. So, but before we get into that, I want to give a couple big, big thank yous, as always, to my sponsors of the show and myself. So sponsor number one is I want to say a big thank you to Flex Pro Meals. I actually literally just finished one of their meals like right before I'm recording this right now, just because I'm telling you guys, like, convenience is like the absolute most important thing ever. Like, especially in the day and age in which we live, and you know, whether you're, you know, an entrepreneur or a mom or a dad or a student, like, it doesn't matter. We all thrive off convenience. And it's one of those things that having, especially in the world of weight loss and transformation, having convenient food is so pivotal. It's such a big deal. So I just want a big thank you to FlexPro for making my food way more convenient. So I'm going to leave a link below, or you can just go to flexpromeals.com. If you get anything, I'm telling you, I want to save you some money. So use my code HamiltonTrained at checkout and it'll save you 20%, which is a good amount of money. So I'm telling you, it's one of the best things that you can do that's going to make your life a lot easier. It's helped me out a ton. And then our second sponsor I want to say thank you to is First Form. Actually, I'm wearing one of their big logo shirts right now. Guys, in the world of supplements, it's really hard to get better than First Form. Everything from the ethics and the character behind the company to what they stand for to the exact products they make. I'm telling you, it's hard to find better. Like, I would say good luck. But so massive thank you to them for keeping my shelves stocked, so to speak, if you're watching the YouTube video. But otherwise, if you're into supplements, if that's something that you're interested in taking, if you're not sure about supplements, I actually have a YouTube video in the description that will help you figure out, like, if you even need to be taking them. But if you do need to take them, First Form is literally your one-stop shop for anything you could need, whether it's something basic like protein powder or whether it's some like more in-depth recovery agents and things like that. It's a big deal. And you can know you're taking the best stuff. So definitely check out the link in the description for that. But otherwise, let's get into today's episode. Now, in today's episode, I am interviewing my very, very new friend, Christy Campbell. Christy Campbell has been in the coaching space for a while now. Her and I actually connected at the speaking event that I was just at. So like we talk about in the episode, at the time of recording this, about a month ago or so, I was speaking at Jason Phillips' coaching event, Impact and Income Live. I was speaking there, and I met Christy. Christy is an absolutely like breath of fresh air. She's an amazing human herself. But she had, like, when she spoke as well, and she had like the entire room crying. She had one of the most heartfelt, touching stories about her journey getting into her own transformation and her getting in shape and overcoming her mental obstacles and herself as a whole, with a lot of other stuff in the way. Like, I'm not going to get into all of it. Obviously, she's going to get into it when I interview her. But I'm telling you, it's like she told her story at the event, and it was the biggest like emotional thing. Like, everyone was in tears. And so I wanted to get her on the podcast. That way you guys can experience this too and get a lot of value from her and her story. So I'm going to get her on the line, and I will talk to you soon. So in case my audience doesn't know who you are, I would love it if you would just kind of like give your rundown on like who you are, what's going on. Because to like give everyone who's listening context, we had met for the first time just like a month ago, right? Mm-hmm. Like we were at Jason Phillips Impact Income Live. We were both speaking at that event and just got talking and stuff like that and connected. And now we're here. So that's kind of how we met. So, but I would love it if you went more in depth on like your story and all that stuff.
For sure. And we found out we're both blue belts in jiu-jitsu.
Yes. I couldn't believe it, because I started as soon as after we talked, I followed you on Instagram, and then you posted something in a gi. Or no. You know, so someone, it was a question on your Q&A box. And I'm like, are you fucking kidding? You're a blue belt too? Let's fucking go.
You know what it was? It was me showing my broken finger on the plane ride home.
That's it. Yeah.
And I was like, I broke this in jiu-jitsu. And you're like, what? And yeah, I don't know very many. I mean, I know the people who go to my jiu-jitsu gym, but I don't know many people, you know, in the coaching space or stuff who are doing jiu-jitsu.
It takes a special breed of person to want to do jiu-jitsu. Like, it takes a special kind of crazy. So that's why I like you even more now. So
I know I've stopped telling people that they will like it. Yeah. I tell people that they should try it. I always encourage people to try it, But I've stopped telling people that they should, that they're going to love it and you're going to, because I just don't think that that's true anymore.
Right.
I think that, you know, it's a long road and it's a good one. But you should try it. Everybody should try it.
We'll have new people come into our academy or whatever. And I want to make best friends with everybody. So we'll be talking and Incense blue belts, like for those listening, is like the first official upper rank. Like people ask, like the blue belts, like, hey, what's up? It's my first day. How do I do this? Like, what to expect? And I just tell everyone, oh, it's gonna suck for the first year. Nothing's good's gonna happen. So this way, in like 6 months, when they're like starting to learn shit, they're like, oh, I'm ahead of schedule. Or people ask what my biggest goal in jiu-jitsu is, and from the bottom of my heart is I want to suck less. It's my only intention is I want to suck less.
Just a little bit less than yesterday.
Yeah. Just a little bit less, but.
Well, yeah, no, it was fun. I'm so glad that we got to meet at Jason's event and we both did get to speak. So that was really fun. A little bit about me is, I live in Washington State, so I'm a Navy veteran. My husband's still active duty, so we're stationed here. I got 3 kiddos. 3 dogs. And so 2 boys are 10 and 12. And then my daughter is 2. And my crazy dogs, I have a Bernedoodle. So it's one of those like insane dogs that look like a Muppet. I mean, she looks like,
is that the one that just walked off your couch that got up and just
yes.
Walked?
Yes. She's insane. And then, so I have this like bougie dog, you know, really that's what she is. She's such a floof, so sweet. And then I have these 2 rescue mutt mastiffs that we rescued last year. They're like polar opposites. But yeah, I have all of these 3 kids, 3 dogs, all the things around me at all times. But I'm a coach. I founded a company called Fit Me. Really the whole reason I became a coach and the reason I founded my company was because a coach changed my life. I think for coaches, that's mm-hmm. that's pretty common.
Yeah.
But I, in the Navy, I had 10 knee surgeries. So this is not typical.
Fuck that. I had 1 and I'm not in the Navy. Like I'm not that cool. Like I had 1 and it was like debilitating.
Yeah. So it was a weird thing where, and I'm not knocking military medicine. However, I do think that my first ACL reconstruction was botched. I don't think that I even needed one. I didn't have a torn ACL, but they decided to do an ACL reconstruction.
Oh, no.
And it didn't work probably because I never needed one, but then they did a series of 3 more. So I've had 4 ACL reconstructions on my left knee and then a bunch of other surgeries trying to deal with it, you know? So the reason I tell you that is because in the Navy, I sort of had this series of physical challenges that happened, all of these surgeries. So I kind of lost some of the fitness that I took for granted as a kid. I mean, I ate like crap, but I was an active kid and then I was active in the Navy and I started to lose that. Well, then I got married and had my first 2 kids, had my really poor eating habits that I developed from growing up. And then I perfected in the Navy. And then, you know, found myself 40, 50 pounds overweight and completely stuck and unhappy and doing every diet thing out there, feeling like, well, this is mom life. This is what it's going to be like to have kids. You just kind of no longer get to be happy in your body anymore. You're going to wear clothes that cover you up that look nice, but not necessarily look good. You know, you don't feel confident or sexy or pretty anymore. And I just was like, well, I was in my late 20s. And I'm like, this must be mom life. And I was also really annoyed with myself because I was like, why are all these other women that I can see, my friends and some of, you know, why are they able to do this? Like, how can they keep a healthy body weight or what makes them show up to the gym? Why can't I do it? And I was really hard on myself too, because every time I would try one of those like diet gimmicks and it wouldn't work, I would give up on it because it was unsustainable. I just didn't know it at the time, but the problem was me. And I was like, I'm just the kind of person, I guess, that's stuck. That's going to be overweight. And so I was in that place of feeling like a good mom. I felt like I was a happy mom. I was a happy professional, but I was not happy in my skin. I didn't like looking in the mirror, didn't feel like myself, and I didn't think I would ever get it back. I mean, context is like, I had all those knee surgeries. I was like, well, I'm never going to be able to be fit. And I thought eating healthy was smart ones, you know, microwave freezer meals. I was like, this is healthy eating. And I ultimately, my husband left on deployment And my kids were little, almost 2 and almost 4. So it was like the least ideal time ever. I was a single mom in it with 2 littles. And I met a really good coach. I mean, he wasn't some like fancy, you know, fitness dude, most celebrity or something. He was just an incredible coach. And he taught me the basics. He didn't treat me, he didn't baby me because of my knee. He treated me like, I remember he said to me once, he's like, I see an athlete in there. And he taught me to drink water and not to eat out so much and to take, you know, to eat less sugar and to eat more protein and make sure I was eating enough food. It was like the things that no one had ever told me before.
It was all the unsexy stuff. That's like not exciting at all.
No, but it was, nobody had told me. It was like this thing. I'm like, what? I thought diet soda was how you lose weight, not, you know, drinking water. So he changed my life. And so that was, you know, 8 years ago. And since then I've been coaching and trying to help other women do the same thing, change their lives in their real life. Doing the most simple, doable things that you almost couldn't believe work, but they do.
I love that. That's super cool. Now, is that the same guy that, that from the park story you told?
It is. Yeah. So
I would love it if like, to talk about that. Cause so for those listening, mind you, the event Christy and I were at, was an event of nothing but other coaches, right? Like it wasn't like a health summit or whatever the case is. It was 250 other professionals. And she was telling this story about how she met this trainer, this guy. And like, she had the entire room in tears. It was like everybody, I was in the very back of the room when she was talking, but everybody was like tearing up and it was like super connected. So I would love it if you'd touch on that.
Yeah. So it, you know, I kind of breezed over it. Like I met this guy and he changed my life. But I had tried a lot of things. So, you know, I had met other people, who had solutions, quote solutions. I had joined a gym where I went in, you know, by myself. My husband left on deployment. I felt very alone. And so I was like, you know, I want to make this change. So I joined a gym because that's what you do. And I remember going to the gym and being all by myself and thinking, I don't know how to use this equipment and feeling very isolated because everybody had their headphones on. And I knew I didn't like how I looked and I hated seeing the mirrors and all of this. And it just felt like I was showing up and essentially I had paid money to join this gym. You'd think that would be enough, you know? I had a problem. The gym had equipment. There's a solution right there. I should be able to solve my problem. But I was still really alone. I felt very isolated, like I didn't belong there. And Dante is his name, Dante Finney. He invited me. He saw me and said, "Will you come to my class in the park?" And it's called Pain in the Park. It was the stupidest name.
Marketing.
Yeah, I mean, like, don't call the thing that you want people to come to something that defines it as no fun.
Right.
It could be called Fun in the Park, and I'd be like, oh, maybe, you know. But he called it Pain in the Park. And he was like, "You want to come to my class?" And I was like, "Not really." But I mean, he saw me. He invited me. It was just a simple human thing. So I went to his class, and I remember I dressed up in all black because I didn't want anybody to see my body. And I had my knee brace on because of all those surgeries. And I remember showing up to class and it was some of the most, you know, intimidating things, I guess, to do when you're uncomfortable in your skin and you feel fat. So for example, like we would bear crawl in a circle.
Oh, it's the worst.
That's so bear crawl is really hard.
I don't care if you're jacked as shit. I don't know a single human who's like, yeah, let me get all fours and look at someone's ass and someone's behind me looking at mine. Like, no.
I know. So I think it was just his style of class. That's the funny thing. It's like, he didn't have fancy equipment or things that would have made this the right time, the right class, it was actually the opposite of all that. And so I go and I'm so embarrassed because I'm like trying to do, I can't do a push-up. I can't, this bear crawl thing, my butt is literally in somebody's face. You know, I was there for that first day and none of it felt easy. And at the same time, when he saw me and said that thing to me, "Hey, I see an athlete in there." And at the end of the class, we took a picture. And I felt like I wasn't alone anymore. Like I belonged. And that was the beginning of that year of changing everything. And so it was like, you know, again, it wasn't some weird magic thing. It was just being seen. It was, you know, being included in a place where I could legitimately try, even though it was a disaster. Mm. And that year, I not only lost the weight, you know, I had the physical transformation, but I found me again. I found that piece of me that was lost. And then that's why I was like, this is what I must do this for other people.
I love that. That's super cool. Have you talked to him like since?
I do.
Are you guys still connected?
Yeah, we're still friends. And he's still doing his thing.
Still painting in the park? You haven't made him change still the name?
In the park. Yeah. And you know, what's funny is he inspired me in my very first coaching attempt, because it was his example that when I was like, okay, well, I'm a brand new personal trainer. I'm going to be a coach. I'm going to change lives. Like, there's a lot of different ways you can do that. But the way that I chose was to create a class in the park. And in the middle of December or middle of January in Washington State, where it's raining and cold and snowy and crap, with I had like 4 pieces of equipment, I created a class, and it became the very first place where I got to connect. I got to coach. I got to create that for other people. And it like lit me on fire.
I love that. Ironically, it wasn't my first coaching attempt, but for like that's been following my journey for a minute. I started mine. It was called the Hamilton Trained Bootcamp, and it was in a park. I did the exact same thing. Like I already had like some in-person stuff going, but this is way before I got online. But then I was like, I just want to find some way to give back and do something that's not like paid, that just build a mini community. And it got to the point where like 40, 50 people a week were showing up on a Saturday morning. Like,
it's so fun.
It's crazy. I don't do it anymore, obviously, but like, do you still do yours?
No. So it's funny. You know, that was the very first time I was a coach and a business owner. And so I built that class up for about 18 months, but because we're active duty Navy, we actually transferred. So I had to leave my class and all my people behind. We moved to Maryland on the East Coast, which is where I'm from. And I spent 3 years as a head coach of a CrossFit gym, coaching CrossFit and weightlifting and doing that kind of thing. And now we're back in Washington, where we're probably going to stay put. And my company, FitMe, we coach people online, but my roots are that class, both as for my transformation and for other people in community and coaching. So I still do it a couple times a month for fun. We do it as a fundraiser to raise money for our local food bank. And so it's just a fun way to like see each other in person and kind of stay connected to those roots.
Sure. No, I love that. So let me ask you this then. So like most of like what I talk about, like with my audience and where I really like get fired up talking about is really the headspace and inner game side of all this. Cause even in your story, like what stopped you for years, it wasn't the tactics on fat loss. Like you were ready to do whatever, but it was like, you're saying you're feeling alone, not belonging, too far gone, feeling stuck. It's too late. Like we can't out calorie deficit, that kind of stuff, right? You can't just like, well, work harder, right? It wasn't until a bunch of other stuff started happening unconsciously, right? So how do you go about like with like your people that you work with, like when it comes to those underlying issues, feeling like they're too late, too far gone, just not even like believing they can even do anything. Like how do you start with going through kind of that?
Well, it can, I understand what that feels like.
That's huge, by the way. Because a lot of coaches don't.
Mm-hmm. I understand what it feels like. Again, it's funny, that knee surgery thing, that's sort of a bum deal, right? I got a bum deal, but I could either internalize that and say, well, this is me. I'm going to be sedentary and overweight. And this, it's not my fault. I got all these knee surgeries, not my fault. Or I could take ownership over it. Really, that's what it is. It's ownership over, I'm going to create my own path. And is it going to look the same as it, you know, everybody else's, or it would have like had my knee not been like this? No, but that doesn't matter. It's still my life and my journey and my body that I want to have ownership over. And I think that mentally for me, that was one of the big switches. For a long time, even though I was trying, I didn't have that ownership piece. I still felt like, okay, well, this did not work for me. That thing is the problem. This time is not the great time, so I can't do it. So I would try things, but I didn't have the ownership over it. And when I started working with that coach and going to his class, I don't know that I understood. It wasn't like a switch that flipped, the ownership switch. You know, it wasn't that, but I think something did change in my mind where I stopped making excuses for my knee. I stopped thinking, okay, well, I can't do that class because of my knee. I was like, well, I'm going to go to the class. I'll just do what I can. I'm going to tell him that I had this knee. I'm going to do what I can. And that's the switch that flipped. And so I think for people who are on that journey, and this is what I coach and tell people is, you know, your journey is not going to look the same as anybody else. If you've got seven kids at home, guess what? Your journey is going to look different because you have different kind of obligations, or maybe you have a health condition, or maybe you've had surgeries, or maybe you just have a busy job. Like, it doesn't necessarily have to be a big thing, but it, ultimately ownership is you saying, I'm going to make this work for me. I'm going to figure out how to do it. And it doesn't have to be the right time. It doesn't have to be exactly the right situation.
I love that. I love that so much. Cause so that's right in line with one of the biggest principles that I teach, because especially in my communities, in my following, one of the things that like I will preach till like I'm blue in the face is the concept of own what's in your control and totally disregard what you can't. Like, for me, that is like the solution that fixes everything. I have this, I'm going to probably use it somewhere in like a program or in content or in branding, but I have this concept of like getting results regardless, right? Where I can't personally think of a single situation where you cannot, if you take massive ownership with what's in your control and disregard whatever isn't, like there's no situation that can stop you. Right. It's like people will say, well, Jared, you don't get it. I've got a knee issue. I have all these food allergies. I've got this life stuff going on here. I literally can't do anything. But then I go, okay, can you stop when you're full? Well, yeah. Well, can you like not say fuck it and like try to sabotage? Well, yeah. Well, can you like choose to drink water instead of like a liter of Coke? Well, yeah, like that's a lot that's in your control, but even psychologically is like that when you take ownership, it's crazy. It does this psychologically, it grounds you, right? Because the way that I view it, most people have that switch. They take the couple things that's outside of their control and they hyperfixate, right? And then they take the things that are in their control that could move the needle and ground somebody, and they like forget those exist. You know what I mean?
100%. And most of us have places in our life where we feel more in control than others. And body stuff tends to be this place where we're like, out of my control, can't do it. Can't start at the gym. Can't my work doesn't end till 5 and the class I like's at 4. Can't do it. And we just kind of create these things where, you know, I want to eat better, but everybody in my family wants to eat this. So sorry, I can't. And we feel out of control. But we have other things in our life where we don't really feel like that. And so it's just kind of taking some of those same strategies and applying it to food or exercise or being more kind to ourselves, whatever it is, like in this category of fitness and feeling your best and knowing that there are things in your control.
Right.
And ultimately it's that mindset shift that starts to break down the other things too.
Absolutely.
Because here's a perfect example. This is just a food boundaries example, but I love this one. If you go to a birthday party, kid, adult, doesn't matter. And there's cake there and you look at that cake and you're like, that's not even a good cake. You know it.
Yeah. You know, it's shitty cake.
Yeah. You know it. You know, it's got like 17 layers of like the fake icing and you're like, well, not going to like that. But then they start cutting the cake and passing it around. Everybody's taking a piece and they're passing it and all that thing. And you're like, oh, I have to take the cake. I'm taking the cake. So you take the piece and you start it. And you're like annoyed with yourself because you're like, I had to do it. Otherwise I would have made people annoyed with me, or they would have all looked at me and you internalize all these thoughts. You think it's out of your control. And then 4 people down from you, you watch somebody be like, no, thanks. And you realize that they are actively choosing something. And you recognize that as like, why? I wouldn't do that. Like, why didn't I get to say no? But you could have. So sometimes we think things are outside of our control because of the story that we tell ourselves or all these things that we think people think, like, oh, what would happen if you asked your boss if you could leave at lunchtime for a walk? And you think that you can't, but you actually can. You just aren't doing it. Because once we start to assert these things that we need or want or these boundaries, we find that there's actually a lot more in our control than we think.
So much. Well, and that's the thing is, even from like psychology even teaches us that we don't need a lot in our control to ground us. Like the fact that there are so many things in this life that make things complicated that are so outside of our control, all we need is one or two things in our control. And it lets us, psychologically, it grounds us, but then it also moves the needle for us in most cases. Like, let's say, so like in the case of like you having your knee surgery, you having like physical problems going on, you having kids and dogs and life, but you going, okay, well, I'm going to do what I can at the class. Like, imagine if you never did that. Like that one little thing grounded you in your situation so much, it was the catalyst for your entire life to change.
Yeah. And it's been something I've remembered since then over and over again. Mm-hmm. And grounding yourself with a couple of things in your control. I mean, you've probably heard different versions of this. Sometimes people will do it. They anchor it to a morning routine.
Yeah.
Sometimes they anchor it to daily non-negotiables. So those should be pretty doable to check off the list. It shouldn't be something that is so hard that, you know, you can't, because then it doesn't work as that grounding thing.
It works, for example, momentum the other way.
Yeah, exactly. So one of the things that's in my control is to put on clothes that I actually feel happy in. You can't control a lot of things, but that could be one of them. And just doing that one thing tends to change the entire course of my day. So I could stay in pajamas. I mean, I coach and I work from home, so I could stay in pajamas or put myself in clothes that should have or could have fit before my baby or whatever, you know? And then those are sad clothes. They legitimately make me sad. I don't want to do things in them. I feel less motivated. But one of the things in my control is to put on clothes that I feel good in. And so that is what you're talking about. It's like just one thing that grounds you. If all you did today was just put on your running shoes, you did something.
Right. Well, it's one of those things too, is I've never fully understood the term ignorance is bliss until I got into coaching. And in my experience, when people start saying, well, I'm an all or nothing person, or like, that's just not who I am. Or when we don't want to take ownership of stuff, it's because that mitigation of ownership, it makes the pain of not achieving hurt less, right? It's like if we get pulled over by an officer, everyone goes, oh, sorry, officer, I didn't know I was speeding, because you're hoping he'll let you off with a warning, right? But if we take radical levels of ownership, that stings when we don't show up for ourselves. Like for our clients, one of my favorite things to do is I will literally make their homework to go make like a T chart, put a check mark on one side and an X on the other. And whatever the crazy situation is, I make them write down every single thing in their control. And then all the shit they're freaking out about that is outside of their control, I make them write it down. Now it's real. And I say the check mark column, we have to take radical levels of ownership with, double down on it. And all the thing stuff on the X side, release it, disregard it, big, deep breath, throw it away kind of vibes, because we cannot let that take up mental bandwidth. But now when we go, wow, all of these things are in my control, and then we don't do them, it hurts a lot, because now we're the only people to blame versus like, oh, I'm focusing on this, but it's outside of our control, so it doesn't hurt as bad. That's my own personal belief.
Not my fault. And I think we have to give ourselves grace.
Yep.
Because the things on the checkmark side don't have to look perfect. So it's not like, oh, well, I did these things perfect, but it's like, I have ownership over, you know, I couldn't control that I had to, you know, that my kid got sick today or something, started throwing out way outside of my control. So I didn't get to prep the dinner that I was hoping to prepare, but I can do this. It's not perfect. This is pretty good. It's better than ordering pizza. So it's like that checkmark side doesn't mean perfect.
Right. But even with that, what you just, that exact analogy, can't control a kid getting sick, but hyper fixating on like, well, my daughter's sick. You know what? Fuck it. I'm ordering pizza. You know what? I haven't had pizza forever, so I'm just going to binge on the pizza. You know what? I know tomorrow is normal, but I'm going to wait till Monday. You know what? We're already into December. I'm going to wait till January 1. Now we're disregarding a lot. Right.
Yeah.
But like, even in the situation you just gave, there's so much ownership, even if it's imperfect, like I'm all about that, because there's so much ownership. It's like, fuck, little Sarah's sick. Damn it. Like, be pissed, whatever. But like, all right, what can we do now? Well, let's, you know, even if you're ordering pizza, all right, I'm going to stop eating pizza when I'm full and not force feed myself all of it because I'm an all or nothing person. And I'm going to be back on track with my normal breakfast tomorrow morning. Like, there's still so much ownership in that.
Mm-hmm. And even just saying, man, even if it's just a learning experience, yeah, man, I had nothing in my freezer. Turns out that didn't work, you know? And we ended up ordering pizza. I ordered a salad just so I'd at least have some veggies. But the ownership that you're talking about is maybe I should have a couple things in my freezer for a night like tonight.
Mm-hmm. No, I love that. It's such a big deal. But the problem is, I think for most people is it's the thing that changed it all for you. Like you said, it was the ownership, and from ownership and on things changed. But I think it's until people have that, there's really not a lot that can be done, right? There's so much magic that has to happen for the ownership piece to get into place. So for you, like, this may be a dumb question. How do you, like, let's say someone comes into your circle, right? They're coaching with you. They're doing your stuff. How do you teach someone to take ownership? Like someone's like, and just your normal everyday person, like, how do you have that conversation?
I coach it in the form of little wins. And so keeping small promises to yourself builds momentum. And so we practice, what does that look like? So for example, just doing something as simple as making your bed. I mean, that's a pretty obvious one that people think of, but we practice that occasionally, like not all the time, but it's like, what would it look like if you make your bed for 7 days? Well, why are we doing that? Who cares? I don't care if your bed's made. What I care about is you said you're going to do it and now you're doing it. So you're owning and keeping the commitment to yourself. And then the other way, and this is why I think coaching can be so effective for when we're on a journey. I mean, I have coaches in my life for a number of different things, even though I am a coach. I'm sure you do too.
Yep, 100%.
But ownership also comes from accountability that you've asked for.
Yeah.
So I'm asking for a coach to keep me accountable for something. And then when I don't follow through, even if it's, you know, for legitimate reasons, that accountability piece there keeps me, it's, I still own it.
Yeah.
I have to own the fact that I didn't do it.
Yep.
And then, you know, I get to choose whether I can try again or maybe make an adjustment or whatever. So I think that is also helpful. So the practicing is having someone else create that for you is again, that's not like a baby step. I mean, I still use that all the time, but in different seasons you need that. And then you can start to create that for yourself, and own it. And I think just also being honest with yourself, mm-hmm, about whether or not it was really in your control or not. I think that's the other thing. We didn't say that, but I know that that's true. It goes both ways. Sometimes we actually take ownership over things we shouldn't.
Right.
And put it on us. And it's like, no, that really was outside of your control. So like you said, let it go. So I guess that I feel that there's three things. One, how do you start to take ownership? You give yourself little ways that you can do it in practice, little commitments that you can keep. Practice doing it in small bites where you know you can follow through and hold yourself accountable to it, even if it doesn't end up being perfect. I said I was going to do it 7 days. I did it 3. Boom. You took ownership over it. Doesn't have to be perfect. And so that's piece one. Two, having somebody in your life to help you practice ownership through accountability and support and like a no judgment zone where you get to kind of talk through why it did or didn't happen and make a game plan. That's a big one too. And then being honest with yourself.
Yeah, I love that. That's the perfect little trifecta. So along that, you said something that I want to stay on for a minute. And have been having this conversation with a few different people lately, and I'd love your perspective on it. So there's what I call like the one of the hardest dichotomies in this space, right? In the space of like, let's say we'll call transformation, weight loss, you trying to become a better version of you, whatever we want to call it. But like, for you, where does that dichotomy land between like discipline and showing up for yourself, but also grace? Like, because they're both important, right? Like showing up for yourself, taking radical responsibility and just being disciplined. Like we'll put that over here. But then there's the side over here where we have to have grace for ourselves. But I see in so many cases, that's where that dichotomy is where most people struggle. Either they're giving themselves too much grace and there's not enough responsibility with ownership and discipline, or they're way too disciplined. Like I'll see people that are like, they accidentally forgot to track like the calories in one protein bar and they beat themselves up. They're like, oh my gosh, I can't keep promises to myself. I'm worthless. Like they take it way too far. So for you, where do you feel like how to reach that magic dichotomy where you have grace for yourself, but you're also showing up for yourself in discipline, but not too far? Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does. I think it's a mixture of separating yourself from believing that these things are character traits. Mm. You know, I'm a motivated person. I'm a disciplined person. I'm an athletic person. I'm a whatever. These are labels that are not necessarily true. You know, ultimately they, whether you're using them to do things that you're comfortable doing, or whether you're avoiding things you're uncomfortable doing, those sort of labels aren't helping you. And so the reason I say that is because the difference between showing up for yourself, like the version of discipline or motivation, and separating that is not you. Mm. That most of the time those things have some sort of context. So for example, I don't show up to the gym because I'm motivated. I show up to the gym because I put it in my schedule and I made it a priority. That is a skill set that I have developed.
Sure.
And so that is the difference. So am I showing up for myself and having discipline? Yes, but more so than that, I've just created structures and routines to create the life that I want. And I think that's where grace comes in, right? So if you are doing, so if I have made time in my schedule to go to the gym and I go most days, and maybe, you know, that for you who's listening at home, you're like, oh, I get off work and I go to the gym every day at 5 o'clock. Well, if you're a motivated discipline, if that's all you're relying on, you're not going to feel that a lot of days. So you're not going to go. But also, like, what if you have to stay late? Now it's 5:20 and you missed your class. So you got to give yourself grace. Maybe today's workout is only 30 minutes because that's all you have time for, but you keep it. Why? Because it's in your calendar, because it's a part of your routine. You've built this system that you know is how you keep showing up every day. It's not because you feel like it, but you have this system. So you keep it, even though it's not perfect, you give yourself grace and you show up tomorrow. So I think it's that. I think it's very difficult to give yourself grace without that, without some of that back work, removing the labels, and then also understanding that the people who look like they have discipline, the people who look like they're motivated, actually have done some things to create that. And you can do those things. You don't have to become motivated or disciplined overnight, or even have extreme ownership. You can practice extreme ownership with routines, with systems, with people that you choose in your life. Mm.
I love that. I love that you said where you, like, let's say in your case, where you're at right now is not, it's a skill you had to develop. I think one of the biggest misconceptions is people think other people who are crushing come out of the womb, disciplined, confident, resilient, owning, like graceful, like whatever character trait, if we want to call it that, probably shouldn't call it a character trait, whatever we want to call that. They feel like it's inherent and it's not like a project. You know what I mean?
Yeah. You feel like it's something that somebody else got as a good hand and you got a bad hand, when really that's actually most of the time not the case. I mean, some people have gifts or, you know, things that come easier, but that ownership, when we talk about body image and we talk about how, so when someone's life is changed at the same time as they have a physical transformation, because you can change your body and not change a darn thing.
Right.
And then just go right back. Yep. But when you see the successes that you like aspire to, or you look and you're like, that's what I want. I want to change my body, my life, all of it. And then I want to keep it. That happens with what we're talking about. It's not that they woke up one day and got the motivation card. They might have felt motivated on day one, that might have helped, but then ultimately there were skills that they learned to do to help them create that. And so hopefully that feels empowering to you if you're feeling stuck or frustrated. There's nothing wrong with you. You can learn to do this. And once you do, those skill sets will apply for the rest of your life. And when we're talking about taking care of our body and eating well and moving and all those things and exercise, we're playing a long game here. Like your body is, that's what you got. So it's funny because since that time that I made that transformation 8 years ago, I mean, it's not been an easy road. We've moved cross country since then. I've had injuries. I had a baby. So I got pregnant, had a baby. And there were things along those, and my husband's been deployed twice. So there's been things where I could have, again, had the opportunity to be like, well, this is outside of my control and I can't do anything about it. Or, well, bum deal for me. But because of the skills that I understand now that I've developed, I was able to apply those even in these life circumstances. I still need them. They're not like a magic ticket. So for example, like just let's talk about that workout one. If your workouts are a priority, they're in your calendar. Okay. So that might be hard in the beginning if they weren't there before. You got to carve out time. Now you have time for them. Then you start going. You start doing them. You're like, okay, I got it. They're finally in my routine. I've got this thing. Well, what happens when you twist your ankle? Mm-hmm. Or in my case, I got very pregnant. I was like nine months pregnant, where legitimately I could not do the things at the gym that I was accustomed to doing. So I would just show up anyway.
Yeah.
Because I recognized that the system that I had created, like the going to the gym at this certain time, I needed to protect that.
Yeah.
So that I could keep it so that after I had my daughter, then I would keep going, you know, it would already be carved out as opposed to having to start over from scratch. And so there's things like that where almost you have to go through the motions at different times. Because once you've created it, it's easier to maintain it than it is to start over.
I always like to call that, I use a term I call mental momentum, because I think where people go wrong a lot is they have everything expectation based, right? They're like they go, oh, well, we had this family function or we had Christmas dinner and I ate like 10,000 calories of cookies. So like, is my workout tomorrow really going to do that big of a deal that much? I'm like, well, one, absolutely. But like, it's because they're comparing it for an expectation. It's like, oh, well, I did this. Is it really going to do that much? It's like, well, why don't we remove that expectation? Because it's still the mental, first of all, no one should be working out with the intention of I've got to burn a bunch of calories, but it's still the mental momentum side, right? Getting up and making your bed when you don't feel like it, because you said you'd make it, is still mental momentum. Choosing to eat two pieces of pizza stop when you're full, and not just going with old conditioning and binge eating the pizza because like, fuck it. It goes back to just mental momentum is so underrated with all this stuff.
Mm-hmm. And mental momentum, you have to protect also.
Absolutely.
So when we talk about comparison or expectations, one of the worst things that you can do to wreck your mental momentum is to constantly fixate what someone else is doing or some timeline that you think somebody else did it. And so you should do it then. I remember after I had my daughter, George, I mean, she's only two. So I had her 2 years ago, and keep in mind, I mean, like I was coaching for 6 years. I felt like I was in really great shape before I had her. And then, you know, pregnancy weight happens. And so I think I gained 40 pounds with her and I exercised and I ate well. It was just like my body, that's how much I gained. So you have a baby and all of a sudden everything in my Instagram feed is fit pregnancy. Mm. And I'm seeing all of these like women who have these beautiful postpartum bodies in 6-8 weeks. They're like back to them. They're showing their literal pictures of themselves with their, you know, postpartum, the coming home pictures. Okay. The ones that, you know, everybody shows like with the brand new newborn baby, and their body was like half the size of mine. And I remember thinking, again, it was sort of this moment of catching myself in this place where if I didn't protect my mental place, I would get really annoyed with myself. Why haven't I lost weight as fast as these other women? Why does their postpartum body look way better than mine? Like, why does everything on my Instagram feed make me think that I should be back to, you know, the way I was at 6 or 8 weeks? And so to protect that mental space, I unfollowed all of it. Mm-hmm. And that was very helpful. Yeah. Because again, like what you're saying, you you have to do your own journey. You have to take those little steps to create the momentum. But if you start to compare and you start to create unrealistic expectations or just timelines that aren't yours,
100%,
it can take the wind right out of your sails.
Yeah, I actually, a great analogy with that or example is one of my girls that that I'm working with right now. She's got a lot going on. Like now, granted, with so I like the more fucked up a person is, like the better. Like that's just like give them to me. So like almost everyone we work with isn't just smooth sailing the fat loss, right? If they binge eat, they emotionally eat, they sabotage like a motherfucker, like that kind of stuff. But that's like my people, right? That's who we want to work with. Well, one of my girls right now, she's crushing it. She's been, so our stage, when we coach people, our stage one, before we can get into fat loss, we call it dieting from the inside out. It's where we fix all that emotional headspace stuff, right? It's where we're stopping binge eating, ending sabotage, fixing food relationships. That's where we're doing all that at. Well, one of my girls, she's crushing it. She was like binge eating like four times a week, like constant self-deprecation, horrible food relationships. Well, in a few months, she's like through all that. Like hadn't binge eating anymore. She doesn't feel guilty around food. She has grace for herself now, like crushing it on point. Well, then with one of her check-ins, she sends me a YouTube video and I go, uh-oh. And I'm all about full transparency with clients and stuff. Mm-hmm. And she sends me this video and it's like this girl saying like her body is, what word was it? It was like a 10,000 calorie challenge video. And she's like, her body is immune to calories and how, her body doesn't, you know, she can eat as much as she wants. She doesn't lose weight. She binges every day, all this stuff. And then my client was like, oh my gosh. And now all of a sudden with every week of check-ins, she was sending me like, well, what about this person? Well, what about this person? And I'm like, and I basically said, hey, look, what you're looking at is like, first of all this is a lie. This is clickbait. This is them just trying to get rankings on their videos. And you cannot compare to this. And like her homework for her check-in was unfollow every fucking account. And then I brought to light, it was like, look, this is causing you to sabotage. Look, this is, you have all this amazing progress. And because you're comparing it to this stupid bitch on YouTube, you're disregarding all of your progress. And it's just the exact same kind of thing.
Yeah. It is. Without unfollowing, you are choosing to self-sabotage yourself.
Yeah.
And if you see something that maybe triggers you or makes you feel some kind of way, it's not their fault. It's fine. Let them do their thing. Like that's their journey. And it's not their fault that you felt some kind of way. So the only thing you can do is put up a boundary. And you get to choose those boundaries. And I think maybe the first time it happens, you might just be able to be like, maybe it's just an off day. You don't necessarily have to take, you know, immediate unfollow action. But if it happens more than once, like you said, like the first video somebody sent you, right? So the first video she sent you, you're like, meh, okay, that's what this is, onward. But when it becomes a thing where they're constantly looking, where we do this too, like you constantly start to look at other people, well, then you know you got a problem.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I love it. I literally can't believe we've been going for like 45 minutes. This is why like the way that I run my podcast is like, I might have a couple of notes or bullets or talking points, but otherwise I just like to vibe the whole way through it. It drives like my type A personality people bonkers. And they're like, hey, can you send me like a script or an outline? And I go, no, we're having a conversation, bro. Like,
it's easy. It's like new friend conversations. We could probably talk for hours.
Yeah, you know? Absolutely. Well, we did it once in Scottsdale. Yes,
we did.
I love it.
And next time we're going to see each other, we're going to go find a place to drop in and do a workout or, you know, hit a roll at, I don't know where, but maybe Arizona.
I love it. Where can people find you if they're like, oh, this is fucking dope. Where can I find her at? Where's all your stuff?
The best place to find me is on Instagram. So at Christy May Campbell. I try to share my real life and my stories. So you're going to see my kids, my dogs, what I eat, what I do, the real deal. I try to give you these simple things that have worked for me in my Instagram. So that's one place. And then the second place to find me is I have a short form podcast. It's 5 to 10 minutes. It's Monday through Friday. It's called Fit Me Coffee Talk. And I drink a cup of coffee. I give you something to use in your day. It's a perspective shift. It's some of this mindset stuff like we're talking about. It's almost like my verbal journal. So the things that I would write down if I was just thinking and having a cup of coffee, I just share them with you and then you can use them. So it's called Fit Me Coffee Talk. And that's the two best places to connect with me. And then if you're, you know, want to see more about what FitMe is about, go to fitmecommunity.com.
I love that. I'll put all those links in the show notes and stuff too. That way, because I fuck up with stuff like that. So I'm going to put it all in the show notes.
Awesome. That's totally okay.
Well, thank you so much, Christy. This has been great. And I can't wait to publish this. So
yeah, I'm excited. And I can't wait to see you again in person.
Yeah, absolutely. I'll talk to you soon. All right, guys, thank you so much for sticking around. For those of you that made it through the whole podcast, if you made it, I know you got so much value out of Christy and her story and everything that we got into. If you haven't already, definitely go check out the links below. I know she mentioned them, but I'll leave all of her links and her to connect with her at the description. That way you can go connect with her, get in her world as well, and hopefully get the help and value that you need. But otherwise, I thank you so much for being part of the podcast. If you haven't already subscribed to the audio, to the video, by all means, do that. And otherwise, I will talk to you guys next time.